Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening we will talk about the issue of military coups in Africa. With us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, Managing Editor, TV English to Africa. Vincent, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
I think you're welcome. And just joining us is my other colleague, Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Blessing Zulu, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Douglas.
You're very much welcome. As I said, tonight we're looking at military coups in Africa. And whether they're on the rise or not, military coups have been a regular occurrence in Africa in the decades since independence. Recent events in Guinea resulting in the ousting of President Conde are the latest example of the army intervening in national politics. Neighboring Mali has had two interventions by the army in less than a year, the most recent one in May. In Niger, a coup was thwarted in March just before a presidential inauguration. So, gentlemen, are the military interventions occurring more often on the continent, Vincent, or is it just a perception?
You know, we had had a break. I mean, there was a time for those of us who are slightly older when coups were quite regular, especially in the West African region. Now, for the last, the last 10 or 15 years, we've kind of seen a slowing down of coup incidents, and that was looking like a good thing, especially, and I have to single out the West African side, especially had more than their share of coups, not to exclude the East African region, of course. But there has been like what was seen as a progression towards democracy, elections happening, so that in countries like Nigeria, which for decades, if you remember back, were led by military strongmen, there were coups after coups. Well, we've seen democracy flourish. We've seen elections take place after every few years. Even in a country like Guinea, there was seen to be hope because, for example, Alpha Conde is a person who was championing multi-party politics. He was in the opposition for many, many years, and eventually there was an election, and so that was also looking hopeful. But, of course, in the last few years, we've witnessed coups. We've seen a military being involved in Zimbabwe not long ago. Of course, we mentioned Chad. We've seen that in Mali. And so it's getting a little worrying that the militaries might be starting to develop an appetite for being involved in the politics of African countries again.
Blessings, before I get to the integrity of this cause, what's the general view on the recent coups you've seen on the continent?
I think it's a worrying development. And since 1950, Africa has had more than 200 coups. I think that's a cause for serious concern. And we are seeing this year, it appears more and more coups are taking place. And just going back to Guinea, you see, Conde was actually amended the constitution so that he would continue to run as president. And there was general concern amongst the opposition that, you know, he was actually running down the country and there was no need to further extend his term. And I think such attempts to amend the constitution to have leaders being a life president is what is actually also fueling these coups. Vincent mentioned Zimbabwe. That's 2017. Mugabe had been in power for 37 years. So I think what we are learning from history is that it repeats itself.
Gentlemen, as I talked to somebody recently who said, there is a distinction between the coups that came immediately after independence, where there were coups across the continent from east to west, there are coups everywhere. The recent coups in the recent years are mainly driven, according to this analyst, by presidents or leaders who seem to want to stay in power. Even the recent example of Guinea is even the president had amended the constitution to get a third term. He mentioned Mugabe there. He had been in power for donkey's years. Mubarak in Egypt, Gaddafi in Libya. all across the continent. So to what extent, I'll begin with Vincent here, is the longer the leaders stay in power conducive to military takeovers?
Yeah, the longer a leader stays in power, first, the propensity to abuse power. Power corrupts, and the longer a person is staying in power, they start feeling a sense of ownership of their country. And what we see very characteristic of all those who stay in power for too long, they do not tolerate opposition, they do not tolerate criticism, and as a consequence, they become so repressive. And because they hold the apparatus of power, they have they're in control of every sector of the economy, every sector of the security. It becomes impossible for the civilian politicians to actually have any effect or any impact in trying to make a contribution or even to change the status quo. And then it becomes natural that the only other people who can make a change in that kind of a country are those who have guns, are the men and women in the military. And so you can see that in all those countries where the people have stayed in power for too long, the opposition is usually so weak. It is in many some countries non-existent. But the reality is that the people, the citizens, are always suffering poverty, human rights abuses, and they become so desperate. And as a consequence, someone in the military, either out of sympathy or the fatigue of being under this one person, decides that it's time to dislodge this person. And the only way, because that person usually is not open to reason, is not open to a discussion or election, the only way becomes to get him out by force. So they created themselves. They actually, in all situations, the men in power who have stayed too long in power, in the positions, create the conditions that lead to a military takeover.
Blessings, what's your take? Because getting maybe an example of a man like the late Robert Mugabe, if he had known when to leave, he would be an icon on the continent.
Indeed, and they say if a cop stays for too long, it will chase away mourners. that's the same with leadership. You also look at, for example, Mali, where there is what others call a dynasty coup. You know, they ousted a leader who had been in power for many, many years, Idriss Deby, and he was replaced by his son. The son was in the military. I think you have also examples from Uganda where potentially that can also happen. But I think it's the military, I mean, is taking advantage of that. Like in the case of Zimbabwe, interestingly, it was Mugabe himself who invited the military to be involved in politics. That is in suppressing the opposition. So people were saying Zimbabwe was essentially, during Mugabe's time, run by the military. We've also seen the incumbent president, Mnangagwa, doing the same, using the military to suppress the opposition. So once you invite the military, it also becomes a problem, just like with Conde. He invited this guy who later led the coup from France. He was in the French military to come back to Guinea, and all this is done to ensure that he remains in power. So these leaders invite the military. The military comes in. There's a lot of corruption. The leader has been there for a long time. There is fatigue, and the military takes over. But you would think that if the military takes over, there will be democracy. But unfortunately, it's not happening. You know, sometimes it turns out to be even worse after those coups.
I see. Vincent, interestingly, talking about Guinea, we're getting reports that the leader of the opposition, main opposition, is in full support with the military, having taken over power. Isn't this interesting? Because now this it appears now, if you're in the military, you don't have to have a protracted war. All you have to do is maybe listen to the opposition and maybe make your move.
Yes. The leader of the opposition, Diallo, said that he's willing to talk to the military. Mm-hmm. And actually, the opposition guys are even willing, possibly, to join any transitional government. But you see, it tells you the same thing that I always say. Politicians are all about power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how you get there, it doesn't really matter. So what the opposition in Guinea sees is an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't get in through an election. Now they're getting an opportunity where they could possibly become part of the next government. I think their gamble will be that if the country, you know, once you're in that position, you're in a position of influence. So if there would be an election in the future, they might stand a better chance. So one thing is, if they're offered certain positions in that government, they would see themselves as having gotten closer and also developed a more cozier relationship with the military, hoping that perhaps if they're in the good books with the military, they'll have a better chance in the future either to win an election or to at least participate in running the country.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, all politics is about getting
power and retaining it.
And how you get it, it really doesn't matter. So I wouldn't be surprised in as much as especially the leader of the opposition is saying he personally would not want to join the transitional government. If he's offered a particularly attractive position or he's promised to be that they would support him to become the real leader of that country, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, politicians change their minds all the time.
Blessing, that's one scenario. In other countries, it's the infighting within the party itself that one of them decides to get dislodged and another takes over, like the case was in Zimbabwe. It was the same party. To what extent are the people involved in egging on, pushing on the military to take power?
I think like what Vincent is saying, that, you know, politicians, for them, it's all about power. But unfortunately, just looking at the Zimbabwe example, the opposition was quick to embrace the coup leaders. But after that, there were no reforms at all. There was no demand for electoral reforms and all the things that they've been fighting for a number of years. So now, you know, there are some actually say maybe Mugabe was better. You know, it's the devil that you know. So I think after these military coups, opposition parties and also regional powerhouses like ECOWAS, like SADC, must push so that they are reformed, you know, as a condition for those military guys to have any relations at all with regional bodies. But what we have seen is that, you know, the military comes in, they promise reforms, they stay in power. I tell you, mark my words, in Guinea, they are not going to leave power anytime soon. They will stay for a long time. And, you know, there will be all these reforms, or rather there will be these curfews and all, and these emergency laws, in which they will disguise as meaning to ensure that there is reform in the country. So the democratic spaces will be closed. The military will be saying we are righting the wrong. That has happened for a number of decades. But, of course, nothing will happen. You know, it's a vicious cycle. You'll be back to the same spot again. Another, you know, colonel or captain in the army will stage a coup. And, you know, it goes on and on like that.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. Tonight, we're discussing the situation in Africa as far as military coups are concerned. Our panelists are my colleagues, Vincent Macori, Managing Editor, TV English to Africa, and Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe Service. And I'm your host, Douglas Impoga. Now, gentlemen, Blessing there mentioned the issue of these regional bodies, ECOWAS coming in. All these regional bodies, they condemn military coups. AU inclusive. The trouble is when the leaders who are overthrown, when they are changing their constitutions, staying in power longer and bulldozing their way through all those fake elections, these regional bodies don't say a thing. Is it because of the camaraderie or the brotherhood among the leadership? What is it? Because they would prevent the cause if, for instance, in Guinea, if the man had served his 2 terms, he would be retired, respected ex-president.
Yes. That is a point I wanted to bring out. The reality is that African leaders have displayed hypocrisy in all these situations, in that they actually tolerate each other's excesses. As you rightly mentioned, they do not talk about those of their own who are abusing power, mm-hmm. who are trying to extend constitutions, who are oppressing their fellow citizens. They don't talk about it.
No.
When the coups happen, like we saw in Guinea, then suddenly you hear the leaders, the regional bodies like ECOWAS is going to hold a meeting, and they're likely to announce sanctions, or the African Union condemns, and they're going to talk about sanctions. Where were the sanctions when a leader was changing the constitution to extend his stay in power? Where are the sanctions when a leader is oppressing his own people, killing his people so that he can stay in power for long? Where are those sanctions when those in power do not tolerate the opposition?
Mm-hmm.
So if the African Union meant well, if ECOWAS or East African Community or SADC meant well, they would be first dealing with those issues that could lead
mm-hmm.
to coups or even upheavals. They would be holding each other accountable on the issue of leadership, democracy, human rights, and even economic development. They'll be talking about corruption. They'll be talking about poverty of their people. So you cannot wait to condemn coup leaders and also try to imagine that at that time you can pressure them. With due respect, Zulu, I have to say, we can't say that now if ECOWAS or Africa Union ensures that those coup leaders, kind of build certain structures to ensure there will be a better, country tomorrow. That is usually it's very self-serving. Mm-hmm. They may do mm-hmm. certain things. They may even decide to change certain things that were looking like they were repressive. But as Zulu mentioned there, they're likely to stay on in power. And eventually, they end up just abusing power. The problem is that at some point, these people, once they stay in power for some time, they again become part of the African Union.
Mm-hmm.
They become embraced as leaders.
Mm-hmm.
How many leaders do we know today who were actually military men before?
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to say that I don't think African leaders have had an interest of having a more stable, more developed country, continent, rather. And they do not hold each other accountable. They enjoy that camaraderie. It's a club. And, when it is disrupted a little bit, they may say one or two things. But the next day, the next few months, they again embrace whoever becomes the more stronger leader in his country. And it becomes part of the African Union. And they forget about how he came to power in the first place.
A blessing. Is it because of their seniority? Because we remember Gaddafi was almost the darling of the AU. He was financing it, had transformed it. Late Robert Mugabe was a respected leader because he was the most senior anyway, sort of. Al-Bashir in Sudan, the ICC wanted him. The leaders got together and said, no, you can't touch him. Is it because of the seniority that they influence these regional blocs, or is it because, I don't know, they're all the same?
I think saying in Africa that when you are chewing, you don't talk. So I think that's what they are doing. Once you are in power, there is no need to criticize your neighbor. Of course, they also say if you stay close to a cemetery, you don't have to mourn for everyone. They really don't care. There are no peer review mechanisms like what the African Union promised to do. And like when it comes to elections, for example, it appears the leaders are kind of prosperity prophets. you know, it's like they declare that an election is free and fair a year before it is held. You know, you've seen where the AU, ECOWAS, and SADC have gone to observe elections. Even if, you know, it's clear that the elections are not free and fair, they simply say the election was fair, you know, just to appease one of their own. So this is a breeding ground for coups, because there are no elections happening. It's what can be termed electoralism. It's just a ritual that you are going for elections, but these are not elections. You know, it's clear who the winner is. Like Stalin said, it doesn't matter who votes, but the one who counts the votes is the one that matters. So there is the problem, Douglas.
What if these regional blocks, I emphasize this because they could have a positive role. What if they insist on reforms, for instance, maybe being the first step being strict adherence to term limits? Would that make a difference? Maybe even get rid of the military having to intervene?
You know, if you have to have a moral authority in order to stand up and condemn bad actions of your friends. So the regional blocs are made up of countries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these countries have leaders who will have to display a level of patriotism to their own country and humility. And so for the regional body to become effective, you'll have to have a collection of countries that are members of that body that are willing to make those changes and entrench them in their constitution so that term limits become an acceptable culture and that nobody can have a wiggle way to change a constitution to stay in power too long. Now, if you have within a certain bloc enough countries that have a moral authority to stand up against those who are trying to subvert democracy, then the bodies can have influence and can have a positive influence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you said, if a regional body is beholden to a particular politician, say the most senior leader in that particular regional bloc, then how can they possibly have any positive influence if that is the person they listen to? So the continent of Africa has to move away. In fact, they should not have so much respect for the so-called senior politicians who stay too much in power.
Mm-hmm.
They should actually be treated for what they are, as people who don't have love for their country, people who are undermining the stability of their region. So instead of being beholden to them for their having stayed in power for too long, they should actually be, in fact, be shunned for staying too long in power.
Mm-hmm.
They should be forced to fall in line. But in order to achieve that, whether it is SADC, whether it's the East African Community, ECOWAS, you have to have a collection of countries that have become fully democratic and whose leaders have the courage and moral authority to stand up and say, we will not allow any one of our members to subvert democracy or to stay too long in power.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has to adhere to the limits of the constitutional provisions.
I see. Blessings, briefly, your reaction to that.
Yeah, it's true that there's need for that. You know, I've heard some leaders saying, but wait a minute, there are no term limits for the British Prime Minister or the Israeli Prime Minister. You know, they can. Netanyahu has been, before he was ousted this year, he had been in power for a very long time.
Mm.
But you see, the difference is, you know, should you, if you feel that you are very popular with the people and you want to run for a third term or fourth one, at least you must run democratic elections. But now if you want to stay in power for too long and then you use the military, the police to harass the opposition, I think this is what creates a problem. If you go to Britain, you know, if Prime Minister can be in power for, you know, an unlimited number of terms, but at least they've democratic elections, you know, at the end of the day, after the election, people are not talking of rigging. The other problem is if you go to Israel, I think you know what Netanyahu ended up doing in order to stay in power. He was accused of corruption.
Yeah.
And because he was afraid that he would be investigated once he loses that presidential immunity, he was refusing to go. So that's a very good example for Africa that, you know, you might be a leader, you might be well-meaning, but once you stay in power for too long, you are hermetically sealed from the truth. It becomes very difficult to dislodge you.
I see.
I wanted to add on to what Zulu said. One thing that people have to realize in those situations where leaders can stay in power for long, I lived in Germany, they also have no term limits for the chancellor. But you have to realize that in all these countries, they have a different system. Usually, actually, they vote for the party. And then the person who leads that party becomes the leader. But the elections are usually very transparent. They're very competitive, and the person has to fight to win those elections based on the policies of their party and on the history of what they've done, and people will decide to vote them in or not. Now, this is so different in countries where the person who is in power holds the key to the election process. He has the control over everything that makes a country. And then he personally decides that I want to stay long in power because I want to see my vision of this country realized. Now, there's something I have to say for the few minutes that I may have. The vision of what any leader has of his country has to be and ought to be a collective process. No individual can live long enough to see their countries become what they wish it to become. It has to be all citizens participating, so one leader does something, contributes, and hands over to another one.
In one word, is this the last coup we're seeing or more to come?
We might see more.
How about you, Blessing? This may be the last or more to come?
I think more to come because, you know, once a coup happens, the African Union does nothing except to condemn. This will encourage more and more coups.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleagues, Vincent Makori, Managing Editor, TV English to Africa, and Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
You're very much welcome. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, in Washington. I'm wishing you all the best.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, climate change tops our agenda. It's wreaking havoc worldwide, and many African countries are already feeling the heat. We'll look at what's behind the growing call for climate justice across Africa, and we'll shine a spotlight on young Africans who are taking climate action in their countries. Join me, Heidi Adams, on the next Straight Talk Africa, this Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis, moderator for Issues in the News. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including President Biden calls on world leaders to unite in the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic and the climate crisis to uphold human dignity and strengthen the international system as he addressed the UN General Assembly. Listen to Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.